Welcome back into Press Row here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. David Pascal, Jay Greason, Wells Guthrie producing the show. Hoping everybody out there is having a safe and fantastic Friday. And we wish you and your loved ones a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Well, it's always a pleasure. It has been a while since we have had him on, and that is my bad because he's always entertaining. Former Chattanooga Lookouts manager Philip Wellman, who would go on to manage the Mississippi Braves and lead them to a Southern League championship. And as recently as last year was the Texas League Manager of the Year after guiding the Amarillo Sod Poodles to the title. Philip, how are you today?
I'm great. How about them Sod Poodles?
Well, what is there to do in Amarillo? I know you're a Texas guy originally. I've heard it's a nice park. Was there stuff to do in Amarillo? I know you're a Chattanooga guy now.
Yeah, it was a way better experience than I anticipated. It's up in the Panhandle, and I never spend a lot of time up there. But you know, we play in Midland, Texas, a lot, and I had visions that it was going to be like Midland, but it's not. It's a very modern town and modern amenities, and there were plenty of things to do. It was a great experience.
All right, I remember, of course, obviously I dealt with you a lot when you were managing the Lookouts, but then I would still deal with you when you were with the Mississippi Braves, and of course there was a stretch there where Snitker was the manager and you were the hitting coach. I believe that was the team that had Francoeur and McCann on it. But, you know, obviously when you look at Snitker, what do you think about the job he's done with the Braves, especially these last couple of years?
You know, I think he's done a great job, and, you know, I'm probably a bit biased because he's a dear friend of mine, but you know, I talked to him the day after they were eliminated, and you know, told him to keep his head up. And I said, you know, those of us in the industry probably look at it a little different. You know, I was a fan, and because I worked for the Padres, but I was pulling for him. And you know, I told him, I said, if somebody had told you that you're not going to have Cole Hamels, Felix Hernandez, and Soroka, but you're going to be one game away from getting to the World Series, you'd have taken it. He said, yeah, you're right. And so for him to have, you know, those three big pitchers missing out of his rotation and for them to go as far as they did, I think it's quite an accomplishment.
And you think about them next year. I mean, he just, especially if they can bring Ozuna back, I mean, they would seem to be absolutely set for the years to come with some of the contracts that they've got on their young stars.
I think this year was just a tremendous experience for a young group of guys, and you know, some of those guys probably would have been pitching in Triple-A, maybe even Double-A, had they not been had we played a season. And for them to get 60 games of big league experience or plus the playoffs experience under their belt, I think that'll show up next year. And you know, I don't you know, Ozuna's a big bat, but you know, I don't know if they're going to have a DH next year or not. You know, he's not the best outfielder in the world, but you know, if he hits enough, he can cover up for his defense.
All right, because you're in the Padres organization, are you forbidden to pull for the Dodgers? What do you think of this World Series?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm pulling for the Rays, but you know, the Dodgers are good, and you know, even in their minor league system's really good. 2 years in a row, we played their Double A affiliate Tulsa in the championship round, and in 18 we got beat by them, and in 19 we beat them. And it's another thing too, David. We've known each other long enough to know I don't like the fact that you might be able to go out and buy yourself a pennant. And you know, there's obviously a disparity in the money that some organizations can spend versus other organizations. And you know, it's Tampa is one of those low money organizations. You know, they're not a big market like LA is and Chicago and New York. And you know, I started watching them play, and I'm not going to lie, half of those guys I never heard of before.
All right. Like I mentioned, you were the Texas League Manager of the Year in 2019. You won the Texas League title, and you had no idea that in 2020 there would be no baseball. I remember, Philip, I want to say the last time we had you on, you had stepped away from baseball for just a little bit, and you were just beyond itching to get back into it. What have these past few months been like for you not getting to do what you love so much?
It's kind of giving me flashbacks to 6 years ago when when my contract didn't get renewed with the Angels. And, you know, just for those listening, that wasn't my choice to step away. You know, I got a phone call with about 12 days left on my contract telling me they weren't going to renew me after they had told me they were going to renew me a week earlier. And, you know, then I scrambled for 12 days to try to find a job. You know, couldn't find one, and was lucky enough to land on my feet and spent a year working at Covenant chasing trucks around the country. But, you know, it was an eye-opening experience. It was kind of reprioritized my life, and looking back, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It kind of made me even more grateful for the 36 years that I've put in the game. And this year has been the same way. You know, it's weird mowing my own yard in the summer, and I do lessons three nights a week, and that kind of keeps me involved, to a degree working with kids. But you know, that's just what I do, and I love it, and I have a passion for it. And not being able to do it, you know, I'm old school. I'm grateful and fortunate that they've paid us throughout our contract, but you know, you don't feel like you're earning your keep.
You're listening to Philip Wellman, the former Chattanooga Lookouts manager who went on to lead Mississippi to a Southern League title and Amarillo to a Texas League title. You're listening to Philip here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.
Kind of as a follow-up to that, Philip, what's the kind of the conversation between you guys in the dugout across the minor leagues about all of these reports and the contraction and all the things that are going on above your pay grade?
You know, that's how I look at it, too. It is above my pay grade, but the thing that frustrates me is that no one knows anything.
Right.
No one knows, you know, that it all came out last year. They were going to contract 40 clubs, and you know, I don't know any information, and I don't think our bosses know, it's not a good situation in my opinion, but just the unknown and trying to think about moving forward. You know, the most I'm getting out of it is that there's going to be no short season rookie ball clubs, and everybody's going to have a double A, a triple A, and two A ball clubs. And, you know, that's going to cost a lot of people jobs, and that sickens me. And, you know, the Padres, as a matter of fact, just a couple of days ago, you know, I had 25 of my buddies, were told that they weren't going to be renewed. So it's getting, you know, it's touching the industry everywhere. That I saw where the Cubs were going to furlough or not renew about 100 people. And that scares me, because that's an organization that has some money. And, you know, I think it's just going to have a big effect. And I kind of just wish we all kind of knew what was going on and where we were going with this.
No, that's very well said, Skip. I'm curious on more of a little bit happier angle of this. The Padres have one of the great young players in the game in Fernando Tatis Jr. As a guy who we're all kind of, you, David, and I are all roughly the same age and can remember the glory days of baseball in the 1980s, is it a little surreal to you to see the Bichettes and the Biggios and the Tatis Juniors and Yastrzemski and all these guys who you either worked with or we followed their dads are now all their kids are out here being superstars?
Yeah, it makes me feel old is what it does.
But, heck, you had Pete Rose Jr. 30 years ago.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, I felt kind of weird then. But, yeah, to see their kids coming through. You know, I had Cal Quantrill a couple years ago. At the same time, I had Fernando Tatis Jr. And I'm thinking, you know, I used to watch both their dads play. And, you know, it's a cycle, and an amazing cycle at that. But, yeah, you know, I think when the day comes when I'm done with this and I sit back, I'll relish it even more, thinking that, you know, I got a couple generations under my belt and got to watch them play and was privileged enough to work with them. But, yeah, Junior, that year I had Tatis Jr. playing short in double A. He was the youngest player in the Texas League. And, you know, I often remind him, I stay in touch with him, I often remind him when he starts getting a little too big for his britches that he hit $179 in April. And, you know, keep him humble and keep him hungry. But, what a great kid, and man, what an electric athlete, electric body, and you know he can do a lot of things. I still watch and marvel at some of the stuff he can do, and I'm to the point now where I try to find something he can't do, and so I can call him and get on him. But he can do everything, and he does it really, really well.
Well, he couldn't get over the Mendoza line when you had him in April, so there's that.
You know, I think he thought he was going to be. He actually jumped high A ball. He came from low A ball to double A, and you know, I remember telling him in a meeting. I said, "Look, when he hits 200 in April, y'all don't panic." The front office, and they said, "What would make you say that?" And I said, "Got 20 years of experience in double A," and I said, I don't remember very many guys in the first time they stepped foot on a double A field just coming out. McCann was one of them. Oscar Tavares was another one that they didn't miss a beat. But, you know, even the likes of Frank Coeur and all these highly touted prospects, they struggled a month or so. But once he figured it out, I think he thought he was going to get nothing but fastballs to hit, which he could do. And until he quit chasing pitches out of the zone and locked in on you know, having the ability to hit a slider or change up, things weren't going to change. And he finally awoken, and he took off. And I think he finished up 280 something. But what a, you know, 19 years old. I kept looking at him during games, thinking, you know, what was I doing when I was 19? I was trying to figure out where my next class was going to be.
Right. Or I was trying to figure out where my next beer was going to be. But
yeah, absolutely. You know, well, I wasn't going to say that on the air, but I was wondering if I had enough money to buy a six pack. But that's about it. You know, I'd have a lot of worries on my plate, a lot of concerns. But you know, this guy was he knew he was close, but he was underperforming. And you know what? At the time, Andy Green was our manager, and I told him, I said, this is going to be great for him. I said, because you know he needs some adversity and he needs a struggle, and if he's as talented as we think he is, he'll come out of it, and he did. And I said he'll be for the better. And because when he gets to the big leagues, you know, he had a little skid a couple weeks this year where he kind of fell out of the boat swinging the bat, but he regained himself. But, you know, I look back at those things and think, you know, the reason he didn't panic and the reason he just stayed with it is because he's been there before. And thank goodness it was in double A as a 19-year-old instead of, you know, a month long. If he'd have done that in the big leagues for a month, that'd have been half the season.
You're listening to Philip Wellman, former Chattanooga Lookouts manager. There was one time where Philip and the Lookouts had a rough patch. They had lost about six or seven in a row, finally won, and I'm talking to Philip after the game, and he said things had gotten so bad that the night before he had gone to Big River to introduce himself to people just to remember what it felt like shaking hands after a game. That was one of my favorites,
you know,
of yours.
During the season, shaking hands is a big deal, you know, and that, I was thinking about that the other day, you know, with all this coronavirus stuff, you know, I would have broken all the rules during the season because, you know, I'm going to shake hands and high five guys, but now they're doing these weird little dances and toe taps and, you know, elbowing each other, but no handshaking going on. I'd have missed that.
All right, I got to ask you, because when I first met you, you were always about Texas. You were from Texas, you know, the football in Texas, blah, blah, blah. When did you become such a big fan of Nick Saban in Alabama?
I've always loved Nick Saban. I loved Saban when he was at LSU. You know, I had an appointment to go and visit with him, I don't know, about 5 years ago. My daughter lives in Tuscaloosa, and I know the athletic secretary there, so I called her and asked her if there was any way. I think I was working for the Cardinals at the time. I said, I'd like to see if I could visit with him for 30 minutes. I have three philosophical questions I'd like to ask him. And she said, let me go talk to him. And he said he'd love to. So I was all excited, man, to ask him my three questions. And about 30 minutes before I was supposed to be there, she called me back and said, it's not going to happen. And I said, what? She goes, well, I can't tell you, but if you watch the news tonight, you'll see why. And I watched the news that night, and three of his players had been arrested down on the strip, and I'm sure he was dealing with that, but I never got the chance. But one day I'm going to get in there and sit down and talk to the guy, because, you know, I don't think you're ever too old to learn. And, you know, he's done some incredible things in my mind, you know, how they just continue to stay at the pinnacle that he stays at year after year with a rotating roster. That applies to me in baseball. I don't, you know, he has a little more control over his roster than I do, but You know, how do you keep Derrick Henry happy when he's not playing as a freshman, as a sophomore?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you do these things? And, you know, I know that the thought of winning the national championship down the road probably keeps some guys around, but, you know, you see that happen in a lot of schools. They get some five-star recruit and he doesn't get to play as a freshman, he transfers. And that doesn't happen at Alabama a lot. I want to know why. And my last question I want to ask him is just how much accountability, how much for his assistants, how much does he hold them accountable for their work, and how involved is he? Because if you think back to Bear Bryant, you know, I have visions of Bear Bryant. It was always in the tower. And, you know, when they show a practice at Alabama, Saban ain't in the tower. Saban's on the field barking. And, you know, I think he's very active and very involved. And I want to see what his thought process is on that. And, you know, all those things are just, whether it's football, basketball, whatever, I'd like to know what his thoughts are on that. And I think down the road that might help me out.
All right, Philip, you've been great. And the way we like to close interviews is just a rapid fire, first thing off the top of the head. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, Miguel Cabrera is the best player I ever saw come through here that you had to deal with. Who's the opposing player that you marveled the most at in your career?
Man, that's tough because Miguel Cabrera was the guy that I had trouble figuring out. I mean, one game we'd pitch him in and get him out a couple times, I'd feel pretty good about it. And the next time he hit a 3-run home run on a 93-mile-an-hour fastball in. So I don't know. There's just been so many really good players, you know, and quite honestly, after him, the next guy in line was one of my own was Tatis.
Okay.
And, you know, that's the first one that comes to mind.
And I appreciate all that insight in the background of Tatis. Who is the best player you had, and it may have been injury, it may have been an area that did not reach the level of stardom you expected him to reach?
You know, I'll tell you, it was worse than an injury, but I was looking forward to watching Oscar Tavares play in the big leagues for a long time, and unfortunately passed away in a car accident in one off season in October in the Dominican Republic. But I often wondered just how special he would have been.
Your go-to Chattanooga eatery?
Charlie's Barbecue on Main Street.
Your go-to baseball movie?
I don't watch movies.
All right. Well, listen, Philip, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it has been a very, very interesting year, but we certainly appreciate all the insight that you provide, and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and thanks for joining us here on Press Row.
I appreciate it. You gave me a little time before I have to mow my backyard, so I appreciate the time, guys.
Absolutely. Take care, Philip. Have a good one. Philip Wellman, the former Lookouts manager, joining us. 648-1051 is the number. We'll revisit the Painter Ready poll question when we come back here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.